You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. This week, we have not one, but two guests. Jamie Mustard is the author of the new book, The Iconist, The Art and Science of Standing Out. One of the stories Mustard uses to illustrate this point in the book is that of actor Holt McCallany, star of the Netflix hit Mindhunter. Many books feature interesting stories like this. However, it's rare that the subject of the story and the author reach out to be guests on a podcast together. But that's exactly what Holt McCallany did in support of Jamie Mustard's book. Both joined me this week on the On Brand podcast. Being a busy actor, Holt was on location and actually called us from his car, which is why he sounds a bit more remote than Jamie and I do. Here's a bit more about Jamie Mustard and Holt McCallany. Jamie is a strategic multimedia consultant and iconist. His passion is to teach the science and art of obviousness, helping professionals, change agents, artists, and businesses confidently and at will make their messages, brands, and ideas stand out to their desired audiences. A graduate of the London School of Economics, Jamie's work is an explanation of the economics of attention based on the primal laws of human perception called blocks. He has spoken, educated, and inspired others with his work prolifically, including TED at the creative giant Wieden and Kennedy. Jamie's iconist work has spanned some of the world's leading companies, artists, and the globe. Growing up in severe poverty in inner city Los Angeles, Jamie overcame obstacles to eventually codify a system of primal laws that can now help us all. In a film career spanning over 30 years, Holt McCallany has appeared in well over 100 films and television shows, working with some of the world's most storied directors. Throughout his varied and versatile career, Holt has worked for David Fincher, David O. Russell, William Friedkin, Lawrence Kasdan, Walter Hill, Clint Eastwood, Brian De Palma, and Michael Mann, among others. He has appeared in notable and pivotal supporting roles in movies like Fight Club, Three Kings, Black Hat, Alien 3, Justice League, and Sully. Holt currently stars in the Netflix series Mindhunter for director David Fincher, where he plays Bill Tench, a complex real-life FBI agent researching serial killers in the late 1970s. Here's my conversation with Jamie Mustard and Holt McCallany. Jamie, Holt, welcome to On Brand.
Nice to be with you.
Thank you for having us.
So I am really excited. As I mentioned to Jamie, a lot of times when we have multiple guests, we have co-authors of books. But Jamie is the author of the book, The Iconist, and it features Holt's story within it. And I want to get to that and how that came to be in just a moment. But I do have to confess, which is an appropriate word, that in an interview setting with two other parties, as a Mindhunter fan, my guard is up, feeling like I'm in an interview with Bill Tench here.
Right. Well, I promise not to interrogate you. No, listen. You know, I'm so happy that that you're a fan of the show. That television show has been a real transformational experience in my life because people just love it, you know, and, the critics loved it and the audience loved it. And, we're hopeful that we're going to get to come back and make another season. But, at the moment, you know, we're on hold, unfortunately. So I'll have to keep you posted on Mindhunter and what happens in the future.
Awesome. Well, again, I think, you know, I think for those that have seen the show and know it and love it, but also I think it does connect back to what we're talking about here, because I'm fascinated. There's the
obvious, you know, crime angle that is interesting in it, but also just kind of the mind side of that as well, which I think is an obvious point of connection with Jamie, your work as well.
Yeah, I mean, I've known Holt for a number of years. You know, a long time ago, maybe almost two decades ago, I produced a documentary about his mother, who was a famous cabaret singer in New York in the 1950s. And that's where we got to know each other. And so we've been friends for years. And when I was writing the book, I was, you know, it's best to write about things that you have an intimate relationship or something you know. And I talk a lot about in the book about this concept of dilution, how there's so much of everything, we become smaller. And I was very lucky. I mean, it wasn't lucky for Holt, but it was lucky for me in terms of trying to communicate this idea of being diluted, that John Landgraf, who's a very brilliant, transparent, open, rare television executive, the CEO of FX Networks, was willing, you know, had all these incredible statistics and a research team about why he thought Holt's other show, which was one of the most critically acclaimed shows of the decade, called Lights Out, about a boxer who gets pugilistic dementia that goes to work for the mob. Very real, very gritty. It had Pablo Schreiber and Stacey Keach in it. The Catherine, the girl from Braveheart, I can't think of her last name. I'm sure Holt will tell me. But it was an incredible show, and it failed after one season because even though it was massively critically acclaimed, no one could find it. And John Landgraf had these specific, you know, numbers about there's 400 new shows. So that was before our streaming is what it is now with all the shows on Netflix and Prime and Hulu and on and on. So this concept of dilution that I was trying to communicate, we're all smaller because of everything. Holt being on this one of the most critically acclaimed shows of the decade that got canceled in one season, that was sad for Holt, but it was good for me to illustrate a point that is affecting every single area of our lives now. And it's the problem that my book attempts to solve.
And I'm fascinated by that because you kick that off, and I think we are used to talking about it's so noisy out there. There's so many distractions. There's so much stuff. There's so many shows to watch. But the way that you frame this with is you talk about the economics of attention, and I think that connects, you know, directly back to. You talk about something like a series, that the economics of can this that is critically acclaimed find the right people in this really odd environment that we find ourselves in at this time.
Yeah, and it happened fast. I mean, we didn't have this problem 25 years ago. It's a light switch. It's a heartbeat in the stopwatch of history. And, you know, what's really important here is the human factor, which when I'm done with, you know, kind of commenting on what you just said, I'd love to Holt to weigh in on the human factor of this and what that meant for him. Because one of the things that I talk about is how in 1950, if you just walked around in your life in the world, you would have been hit with about 250 advertising messages a day. By 1970, that was 2,000 advertising messages a day. By 1998, that was 5,000 to 7,000 before social media, before the internet was in full swing. Now we're probably up to 10,000 to 15,000 advertising messages a day. And all those advertising messages represent businesses, people. They represent human beings that are trying to get buy-in for whatever their art, their business, whatever they're offering in the world is. So the economics of attention means if there's only a couple hundred things that you have to look at, you can notice what you want and find what you want. But once you get up, once you get up to 1,000, a human being couldn't process 1,000 things, let alone 400 television shows. And what's important here is there's a deeply human effect. And hold, I'd like you, like here you are on, we're on one of the most critically acclaimed shows, literally of the decade. I mean, you did this kind of back to back before Mindhunter in a way in 2012. And, you know, you were canceled after one season. And how did that hit you as a person? And I don't know if you could comment on what that meant for you as a human.
Well, gee, I mean, you know, it's a really it's very depressing to get canceled, especially when your show has been critically acclaimed, as Lights Out was. It was really well liked by critics and by people who watched it. We just didn't have enough of an audience to get renewed. You know, television is about advertising, and John Landgraf, the president of FX Network, is a very smart guy. And really liked the show and was a big supporter of the show. But, you know, the network needs to be able to sell those 30-second commercial spots for a certain number. And you have to have a certain amount of viewership in order to meet that threshold. The real sad part is that, you know, when that show debuted in the beginning of 2011, you were still, as far as networks were concerned, you were still only getting credit for people who sat down on Tuesday night at 10 p.m. and watched Lights Out. If people watched a rerun, if people watched it online, if people like to get the DVDs and binge watch it in a weekend, you really weren't getting credit for that. Because the networks had not yet really faced up to the reality that appointment television was becoming a thing of the past. And now people want to watch it on their devices. They want to watch it, you know, at times that are convenient for them, et cetera. You know, I think this is part of the reason that Netflix has taken over the world, you know, and the other streaming services. You know, the numbers that I had for Lights Out, if I had them today, given I would get renewed immediately. I could run for multiple seasons. It would have been largely sufficient, but I didn't have those numbers. But look, you know, both of my parents were actors. They were in show business, and I grew up watching their trials and tribulations. And I understood that the business is like that, that there are ups and downs. And it's true that, you know, it was a great disappointment when that show got canceled. But then, look, I came back now with Mindhunter, another show that has been, you know, critically acclaimed. You know, I think season two debuted to 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. You know, we finally dropped down to 98 or 97 after many, many, many weeks. You know, so critical raves, and the show found an audience. And yet, for completely different reasons, Mindhunter might not come back either, you know. And I think just in terms of like how all of that maybe, you know, relates to The Iconist, you know, and Jamie is, you know, certainly, you know, the authority on this, not me. But it just goes to show that it really is hard to establish, you know, a brand that is lasting, that really can capture the imagination of the public in a sustained way over time. Do you know what I mean? And be profitable and be rewarding, you know, creatively, and something that all the participants can be proud of. It isn't easy. It isn't easy.
I mean, just to put a just to put a capper on what Holt just said there, you know, when John Landgraf was asked why he was canceling such a critically acclaimed show, he flat out said there's so many shows that no one could find it. That's the economics of attention, and that's what every single human being on this planet is dealing with right now. And, you know, and there's another theme from kind of, ironically, there's so many ways I can talk about Holt, but, you know, there's another theme. And Nick, are we going on and on, or can we keep going?
Go on and on.
Okay, there's another theme from Mindhunter that kind of runs through my book, this concept of dilution and this concept of how we feel psychologically. I mean, I was talking to Holt at the time when that show got canceled, and I saw him. It wasn't just what he had to put into it as an actor, as an artist. He put everything into it. It's what he had to do to his body to transform himself to look like the heavyweight champion of the world. I mean, I'd never seen somebody work so hard on something. And so to say he was disappointed at this point, maybe with the lens of Mindhunter, is an understatement. But because I was talking to him at that time, and it was all because people couldn't find it, because there's too many things. Everyone in every field faces that now. But lastly, you know, a theme of Mindhunter in season two that I think really runs through the concept of my book. There's an incredible season, a thing where Holt is discussing, I think with Holden, the motivations of this killer. Like, do you think the killer is going to show up? Do you think they're going to write another letter or show up at the scene of the crime? And I think, and I can't think of the name of the killer, but Holt will tell me. And Holden says to Holt,
well, you're talking about the ones that actively courted the press, you know?
Yeah, like that, yeah, you know, yeah. We'll hear from him.
Yeah, so that
visible.
Would have been David Berkowitz or Dennis Rader, BTK, Zodiac. There were several of them.
Yeah,
that weren't visible. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, they feel I'd like you to comment on this, Holt. They people feel invisible, and then they see that as a way to become visible. And what I argue in the book is that what these serial killers, this desperate need to feel visible, and when they feel insignificant, because of information overload, and too much of everything, everyone feels that way to some degree now. That's what would you agree with that, Holt?
Well, I mean, look, I mean, there's no, you know, obviously, you know, these men who commit these horrible crimes have many different, varied motivations, you know what I mean? They're having to do with, you know, their abusive childhoods and having to do with, you know, the addiction issues and hatred of women and problems with their mothers and all kinds of stuff. But, you know, but I mean, I think that Jamie's right, that we're all like constantly assaulted at every moment of the day with this endless barrage of advertising everywhere you look. You can't be in any kind of a space, even if you're on hold, you know, they're trying to play music or play commercials or play or sell you something, you know, it's, you know, when people do, I think, you know, struggle, this is why social media, I think, has become, you know, this incredible phenomenon. It's good because people want to feel like, you know, like they matter, and that there's that somebody is paying attention to somebody sees what they're doing. Somebody cares about what they're doing. They want to be noticed. And yeah, in that respect, I think you're probably right. That existed in all of us to a degree.
Well, there's so much again with the. That constant assault and the delusion, you know. In thinking of that, I'm clawing at a healthy alternative than some of the individuals on Mindhunter. But as we look at creating things that do stand out in a positive way. Jamie, you talk about blocks in the book, and at a glance or at a quick listen, people might say, how does a block help you? But your concept of blocks, I think, is a remarkable way to kind of grab at attention, at maybe standing out in that sea of delusion in a way that might be helpful.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I'll explain box kind of just off of what you just said and what Holt just said. I mean, I think that the social media phenomenon, we're using it to feel important, but it also makes us feel disconnected. And in the book, I have research of what happens when we feel isolated. We have less human contact. That creates isolation. And when we feel isolated, again, we have feelings of anxiety, paranoia, rage. These are some of the extreme psychological manifestations that I cite in the book of isolation. And social media, even though we're trying to use it to feel relevant, it's actually at the same time isolating us. But a block is basically creating a large, big road sign in your art, in your science, in your music, something that one can instantly understand in their lizard brain before they have a chance to think. And that if you take that thing and you get it right, and I tell you how to construct it in my book, and you repeat it, you can make something iconic in the mind of another person very quickly in a matter of minutes rather than hope, luck, chance, or years. So the block is the anatomy of what makes something iconic. Taking something very, very simple, and anything, what I would say is anything busy in today's world, in a world where people are assaulted, gets instantly discarded. So you need this road sign that people can, no matter what your medium is, I teach you how to do it as a designer, as a painter, as a musician, as an engineer, as a scientist, as a person writing an email, trying to get buy-in from their coworkers so they can feel relevant at work Again, there's horrible psychological implications when we feel like no one's listening to us. And in a world where no one's paying attention, no one is listening to you. So when we don't feel like anyone's listening to us, and I cite this psychological research in the book, we feel anxiety about ever being heard. We feel dissatisfied with our lives. We feel paralyzed. We won't even try because we don't think we can cut through the information overload. And ultimately, we can feel depression. So blocks give you a way, no matter what you do, to instantly grab attention. And then you can repeat, and then people, you can, it's basically, a block is the anatomy of an icon. It's this big, bold thing that I teach you how to distill your work down to. You repeat it, you can make something iconic in minutes, and now that block no longer ceases to be a block. It's now iconic in the mind of the person you're trying to reach.
Well, and you talk about this in with examples from the creative world, from art, from music, all the way up to some interesting commercial examples. One thing that I love that is in the book, as a Midwesterner who's made this trek many times, is the story of Wall Drug.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of my favorite stories because it's probably the first viral campaign in the history of the world, you know. But there was this deep into the Great Depression, this guy named Ted Husted with his wife, Dorothy, this guy got a $3,000 inheritance in 1931. And again, it was the Depression. And he moved to a tiny town in South Dakota called Wall that had 327 people in it. And he took his $3,000, which was a lot of money back then. And he had just graduated from pharmacy school, and he used all that money to open his pharmacy. And all he wanted to do was go to Catholic Mass and live in a small town and provide for his family. He quickly realized in the Depression, outside of the Depression, that the town was busted broke. It was a tiny town, and no one was coming in to his pharmacy. And they got really depressed during the Depression and got really nervous and really anxiety ridden about what they were going to do. One day, his wife, Dorothy, had an idea. She thought to herself, what do these people driving by in their weather jalopies on Route 16A really need more than anything? Well, it was before AC air conditioning is what it is now. So she thought they need cold ice water. So she got the idea to put up a massive billboard on Route 16A saying free ice water. So they put up this billboard. Before they could even get back to the pharmacy in this tiny town, they were mobbed. And today, Wall Drug is a national landmark. You've been there. You could tell them more about it than I can. And people put Wall, during World War II, people put Wall Drug signs at every, you know, where all the Allied forces were. And it became, you know, the Wall Drug signs at the Taj Mahal, Wall Drug signs at the Great Wall of China. And so it was the first thing to really be viral in America. And so you have to figure out for yourself, what is the free ice water that you have to offer people rather than a stupid tagline or a slogan that nobody cares about. But you need that instant recognition, and you need to say it oversized or people go right by it. Like I said at the beginning, in a world overloaded with content, if people can't understand it in their lizard brain before they have a chance to think, it gets instantly discarded and you could be losing them forever.
Well, and I think we see that in great art and certainly great business stories of the past as well. So I think as much as we are confronted with a very different environment right now, with the dilution effect, with the economics of attention, we can use some of these as building blocks to do big things.
I believe so, and I've seen it work. And I actually just came here from doing a rebrand on this massive industrial Oregon legacy industrial company that's been around for 75 years. And they started implementing these concepts over the last 6 months. They've had me on retainer, and I've redone their entire brand to be based on these big monolithic Sesame Street type blocks. And it's the biggest rebrand I've ever done for a very old company. It's also a pretty big company. And in this very short time, they're already starting to experience the improvements in terms of their sales and their margins from using the techniques in the book.
I think that's a great story, and I think we're only hopefully gonna see more of that.
Well, yeah, that company's called Jewett Cameron, and they make homestead projects, everything from greenhouses to fences to dog kennels, things that you would need on your modern kind of homestead.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, in being respectful again of everyone's time, because I'm so thankful that we were able to have you both and Holt as well, and I know that you're on the go out there, but I feel like I made it through my interview. You and your partner were very easy on me, and you took the cuffs off. We ordered a pizza and we just talked. So.
It's not very often you get a movie star to come on a branding show.
I don't know if I'm a movie star, but it was a pleasure.
Okay.
I really enjoyed it. And here's my pick for a brand that made me smile recently. Are you guys familiar with Extinction Rebellion? It's a UK based sort of grassroots resistance organization. That tries to call attention to climate change and to endangered children and a myriad of social causes by pulling these outrageous stunts, like they famously glued themselves to the gates of Downing Street. They did a fake funeral in front of Buckingham Palace. On another occasion, they poured buckets of blood in front of Downing Street, to protest, all of the at-risk children in war zones around the world. And hundreds of them have been arrested and stuff like this. But they have a sense of humor, and their hearts are in the right place. And they think of these imaginative ways, to grab people's attention. And, I kind of found some of their antics in keeping with some of the concepts in Jamie's book, in fact. And they've just been making me smile. So keep an eye out for them. Extinction Rebellion.
I'm going to Google that the minute we get off the phone. I've never heard it. But Holt really said it right there. Attention is the defining business challenge of our time. And it's the most important thing we all face socially and in business today. If you can't get someone's attention, you can't get them to see everything that you put into your life and your work, whether that's your art as in terms of Holt or whether you're a business, have a small business that's paying for your mortgage and your kids' college. Attention is the most important commodity of our time. And I tell you how to get it in my book, The Iconist. My pick for brand is someone sent me a Burger King ad yesterday where Burger King basically says that there's no preservatives in their Whopper. And they have one single shot on the Whopper, and they show it. I think it's over 34 days. If it's not over 34 days, it's over many days. And they have one single shot that's with time speed up, where they speed up the time, and you see this Whopper rotting over 30 days and completely molding into this disgusting mess. I couldn't believe they did it. But I just thought it was a brilliant way to communicate that there's no preservatives in the Whopper and that it actually isn't as unhealthy as maybe you think. It's not fast food, actually, a Whopper. A Whopper, according to that standard of that time release, is just food. And I thought that was a brilliant ad, and it put a smile on my face.
Well, those are two great examples, and they are attention-getting examples, too. So very, very on-brand choices from you both. Where can folks go to learn more about what you're both up to and what's next?
Well, for Holt,
I've got a website, holtmcallery.com. I'm on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and everything. And, I always post about my projects. And, I've got a couple of films coming up. I'm going to be in Guy Ritchie's new film, Cash Truck, starring Jason Statham. I'm in Guillermo del Toro's new film, Nightmare Alley, starring Bradley Cooper and Kate Blanchett. And they're both going to be good movies, I think. So please, and of course, for those people who haven't seen it yet, check out Mindhunter on Netflix by the amazing David Fincher.
And Holt's being a little humble. First of all, it's holtmcallery.net, just so anybody knows, not .com. It's holtmcallery.net. and you can Google how to spell his name.
Both. I own both. I think I own both.
I thought you do. Do you? I don't know. It's up. Okay. I thought somebody got the .com, so I didn't want to send anybody.
No, somebody was trying to extort me for many years. They wanted $25,000 for holmandkelly.com, and I just waited until it was cheaper and then bought it. I waited him out.
Good. I'm glad you got it.
Yeah.
It used to take you to a bestiality site, but now it goes to Holman Kelly. Also Holtz being humble. The movie Cash Truck does not star just Jason Statham. It is a co-stars Holt McCallany, and it stars Jason Statham. But Holt McCallany is also the star of Cash Truck.
Well, look, I have a good role in it. I have the major supporting role in the film, but Jason's the star. He's a huge international action star, and audiences love him. So hopefully this will be one of his more successful outings. Guy Ritchie's last film.
Well, hopefully for you. We puff each other up. This is what friends do. We're puffing each other up.
Awesome.
Yeah. And then for me, you can go to theiconist.org. You can just Google Jamie Mustard, Jamie Mustard book. You Google The Iconist, and it'll come up, The Iconist, theiconist.org, or just Google The Iconist book, and my website comes up. I'm on Amazon. You can find my book everywhere in the country, at Barnes & Noble. It's in bookstores. It's everywhere.
Awesome. Well, we'll link up to all of that in our show notes at onbrandpodcast.com. Jamie Holt, thanks for being on brand with us.
Thank you for having us.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
As a reminder, you can find those show notes, links, and more at onbrandpodcast.com. If you like what you're hearing, remember to subscribe to the show via Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you like to listen. And please take a moment and rate and review the podcast to help others find the show. Until next week. I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.